Good morning, afternoon, and evening, everyone. This is Philip Millman, your American host for the Generic Board Game Podcast. We haven't done this in a while, so we're going to be doing this a little bit differently. Vic?
Well, this is Vic, your European host, and we're definitely going to be doing it differently. Am I coming through clear to you there?
Crystal clear, like you're in the next room as opposed to, 4,000 miles away or whatever it is.
You know what they say, Washington, not far away, not far enough. I'm determined since we opened this conversation to get you to spit your coffee out, but I reckon I'll have it done by the end of the podcast. There you go, you're drinking that. You're wearing a particularly nice ensemble there in the video, I have to say. It's got the kind of recently escaped mental patient kind of, shoot first kind of thing. It's early morning there, is it?
It's a wee bit early here. Just given our schedules, one of the reasons that we've had so much trouble getting a podcast out is just we've both been extremely busy. Vic has a very important job with the government of Ireland, and if he were to tell me what it was, I'd probably have to be shot and killed by whatever the version of black helicopters Ireland has.
Green helicopters. The thing about this, it's not that each evening I call off the shooters, but hopefully I won't forget to do that. We have an agreement with the American government. In fact, seemingly you're on a couple of lists that they want to take you out, but there you go.
You know what? I work for the federal government. They've taken my soul for over 19 years, so it's fine. It's all fine.
The beauty of this is I don't actually work for any government agencies. I do work on contract with them, and occasionally they mistake me because I've been there for so long that they think I'm an employee. But yeah, none of the benefits, all of the kind of headaches. Anyway, board gaming. We haven't done this in a while. We've got.
Have you done any board gaming in the last year and a half?
Well, I'm probably asking the wrong guy, but does the Pope wear a funny hat? Yeah. Or does he shit in the woods? Yeah. I think there's always a background hum of board games. We've still got a regular Thursday night, and I've been away for some dirty weekends of board gaming with friends, and that's actually become more popular. We've had another NaveCon since you were around, which obviously wasn't as good this time since you didn't make it. I'm contracted to say that. And I've had a few weekends away for a friend, Stag. He's been married for a number of years, but it's still kind of called his Stag since it's about the fifth or sixth time we've done it. I've had a lot, and I'm still Thursday night gaming, which is great. We just finished gaming last night. We did a big slap up game of Eclipse with all the extras, and that has been our kind of jam for the last few weeks. But go back a bit further, we were playing we played one that you recommended and is very, very good, is Pax Pamir. Finally got to play it. Yeah,
it's the number three game on my list. A great game.
I know you're familiar with legacy games and so on. A legacy game with our gaming group is played twice. This has become a kind of uber legacy game. We played it, I think, 5 weeks running, which is quite an achievement. It was like,
wow.
But by the fifth week, it was like, just cut the shit and bring out Pax Pamir. So good. Yeah, it's really, really good.
It's really one of the best games. We should get if you're on BGA, Board Game Arena, we should definitely play
Pax Pamir. Yeah, just not with each other, is it?
Oh, no, I want to play against you because I think, I would love to assassinate one of your spies or one of your cards.
Yeah, that's it. What about yourself? Have you got any gaming in?
So gaming's been a lot less for me. I've gone to a couple of cons since we talked. And I went to a very good con this year at the end of January.
As opposed to NaveCon?
As opposed to NaveCon, in Charlotte, North Carolina, just a bit closer than Ireland. Uh-huh. It was very nice. It was very, it's a smaller con, and it's very chill. I mean, the one thing is it doesn't have a very big library. So, you know, I didn't know that at the time. So next time I go, I'm probably going to drive. I'm going to try probably drive the 6 hours and just bring a bunch of games that I want to play. But I did get a lot of good gaming in. The people were great and I really enjoyed it. I mean, for me, it's been kind of slow since my dad passed last year. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, a lot of time with my daughter and my grandson. And the one kind of games I am playing are with my grandson. So they have Haba has some really, you know, cute games for like 2 year olds, mm-hmm. you know, 1 to 2 year olds. And one of the games we played, which was really has been a lot of fun, and he plays it all the time. It's called Roll and Play. So it has this big fluffy 6-sided die, and on each side of the die is a different color. You roll the die, and then based on the color that comes up, you pick up one of the cards and you're supposed to do the action, like touch your nose, make a sound like a dog. It got to the point where, you know, he knows what each color kind of does. And so now he'll like take the die, place it in the color he wants to do the activity, to do the play he wants.
I thought when you said roll and play that you were, you know, tumbles over or somersaults, and I wasn't trying to picture you kind of playing that game, but it did get stuck in my mind there for a couple of seconds. You're spitting out your coffee, come on!
Nope, kept it down.
Yeah. They're already 6 minutes in. No, that's cool. We do have a very important responsibility to bring generations into gaming, and I think every gamer, you know, must realize how important it is to pass on the secrets of gaming and to induct them into not only gaming, but all things nerdy.
Yeah, 100%. It's sort of like IT, you know, the IT crowd, but on steroids.
That's it. And if they're not quoting Monty Python, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, or anything else by the time they're 5, then we failed.
Yeah, exactly. And you forgot to include Star Trek there. So for the Star Trek people, you know, because the incredible wars between Star Wars and Star Trek fandom are well known and
never heard of it.
In
fact, the other thing that people don't realize, and well, gamers perhaps, and I realized a long time ago, is if you induct your nieces and nephews and, you know, grandchildren or whatever into gaming, if they don't like it, you can always take their games. You know, so it's a long term plan. You're spitting out your fantastic. You need a spittoon in that room of yours there.
I think I do.
Or get out more. We were going to talk about, well, we're going to talk about something unpopular, weren't we?
Not talking about me as a high school student. We were going to talk about unpopular gaming opinions. And, you know, one of the things that is a true hallmark of this hobby is everybody's got an opinion. Mm-hmm. And I won't say what they're like and why they all stink.
Yeah,
but the issue comes in is that, you know, everybody has different views of board gaming, and some of them are popular, some of them are unpopular. And well, one of the things that board gaming is pretty good at, it's gotten over the gatekeepers, right? There was certainly when I started board gaming many, many, many years ago, when my hair wasn't gray. You know, with the old Avalon Hill games and some of the, you know, the GMT games that were, you know, that originally came out, you know, decades ago. It was predominantly a certain demographic that played board games, and they were gatekeepers. And so, you know, as we've as the industry evolved with the advent of, you know, computer systems and so forth. More people have come into the industry, but you know, occasionally you get some unpopular things and unpopular opinions, and the masses go one way, and a few of us go in a completely different way. And speaking of going in a completely different way, what are some of your unpopular gaming opinions?
Oh, don't start me. Start. Oh yeah, sorry, dead air. One of the things just talking about gatekeepers, and it's an interesting point. The thing about gatekeepers is they're still out there. They're just not guarding anything anybody wants anymore, or, you know, their kingdoms are smaller. Anyway, unpopular opinions. I think, Philip, and feel free to suck in air, but just not when you're drinking coffee, is we buy way too many board games. That was good. That was right on cue. I work out of an office, and because now I'm Jesus, don't get me wrong, first world problems and all that. Like, it's wonderful that we can buy board games. I buy way too many board games. Now they all eventually get played, and if my calculations are correct, there should be a minimum amount of them left unplayed by the time I die. But we do tend to buy more games. I did often think that perhaps the world needed a rental system for board games, like old video library systems. They don't. You know, there's more games than people. There's like four cars to every one person, in equivalence. But I find that we have too many games, and we don't spend enough time with some of the games we own. I mean, we played Eclipse the other night. I'd played Eclipse before, but... Like somebody, but if I read a book, I tend to be slow and I digest it. And I think the same needs to be done with certain games. Now, fantastic if you get a lot of gaming in. Brilliant. Fantastic. I met a group of people. They were students that had played Battlestar Galactica, I think it was 200 times, because it was the only game they had and they were poor students. And when I said to them, have you played this before? And they went, oh, yeah. And that's kind of a lot. But there are certain games that are incredible and we still don't play them enough. We're kind of obsessed with the next big, bright, shiny thing. So, yeah, what do you think of that?
I definitely think there is the cult of the FOMO, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think we have too many games. I actually don't. But there's also a part of folks that are just collectors, right?
Yes.
And so for those folks, you know, God, if you have the money and you have the space, God bless, go forth and do good. But I kind of agree that we have a lot of games, but we also let me do a counterpoint. I'm actually going to disagree with you. Yeah, I know it's hard to believe. Games are like books. Right. There is a book for everyone. Right. So I happen to enjoy reading James Joyce. There is a lot of folks, and I know you being from Irish and James Joyce is your national hero, that don't like reading James Joyce. He is a difficult read. And that's OK if I like it and someone else doesn't. I think, you know, but there are other people, you know, who happen to like romance novels. I don't know any romance novel author, so forgive me. And that is not something I enjoy. So I don't know if there's too many games, but I think we do get in the habit of buying too many games based on someone else's opinion. And then this is my unpopular opinion. I'm going to say that most board game reviewers, if not all, opinions are worthless.
Okay, that's quite the statement. Even what's his name and what's her name?
Even them.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I know. And this is one of the reasons why I'm glad that for this podcast we don't actually, you know, do board game reviews. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to see playthroughs. So like when John Getz Games does a playthrough, you can see how the game plays and you get a sense of, you know, what you might like and what not. And getting back to my earlier comment about board games are like books, there's a genre and author for everyone. Just the specific genre and author might not be good for you or for me. I find that true with board gamer reviewers. They have their own opinions. They have things that they like that they don't like. One of the things that I learned early in the board gaming, in my board gaming hobby, well, the current board gaming hobby, was, you know, Tom Vassell and I have very different tastes in board games. Mm-hmm. What he likes, I probably won't.
Okay.
And, you know, the other problem is that board game tastes change over time. And so something that might be that, you know, that say Richard Hamm, who, by the way, is the one of the loveliest people I've ever met, you know, his tastes have slightly changed over time. And there's things that, you know, going back 5-6 years ago, he would have liked, but probably doesn't like as much now. And, you know, your tastes and somebody else's tastes change over time, and they're not always going to be the same. So And I guess that's why there's so many divorces. No, but the point is that a board game reviewer is just telling you their opinion. And again, opinions aren't facts. So my unpopular board game opinion is that all board game reviewers' opinions are worthless.
I'm sorry now, but I'm going to just going to have to oppose that just for the sake of opposing it. I think all reviews are important because the more you put together, you can come up with an opinion. No, you can put up with your own opinion, which is worthless then. And you're 100% right, I think, on the mark. There are certain games I like, and we would have differences in games that we like, and we would have the kind of Venn diagram where in the middle there is the stuff that I no longer like because you like it.
Baseball Highlights 2045 is a fantastic game.
Yeah, I'm looking at the copy over there. It's a lot of dust. But what I would say is I would prefer to see a dozen reviews of a game, 20, 30, 40 reviews of a game, all opinion-based. And in fairness, you know and I know that they're not all opinion-based. They're, you know, some guys get paid for this and they're not going to do down the game if the publisher have given them a free copy or given them some money or given them whatever. Dinner out. They're going to look at it in a more positive light. And by the way, we can be easily bought. Those were our costs. It was a dinner out, money, a free copy, and we will say your game's wonderful. but I think if I look at a game and I'm thinking about a game, I would like to see 20 reviews of it. I mightn't watch them all because half of them are in Spanish. But you know, and two are in German. But I would like to see people's opinions on it, but you can tell a person, like, I mean, you and I have been around long enough that you can, you know, when someone's talking through their hat, you know, you can kind of believe what somebody is saying because they believe, like, you know, someone who's telling the truth and who's lying and is just, you know, full of it, like when it comes to certain games. And feel they should be saying it.
100%. The only thing that I would point out is that, dear God, I don't know how you would have time to listen to 20 board game reviewers. You know, each board game review on YouTube is, you know, 20 to 30 minutes if you're lucky.
You skip it. Intro, skip like on. You would with ours, you know, and then get to the bit where Victor says, "No, I don't agree with you." And that's the funny bit. It's a fair point. Yeah, but you're hitting something that's the same across the board with everything. That no matter what people say to you, you're making an informed, like you're making a call based on what information you have. So how many people are sick today? That's out of the 10 people that work with you, 3 of them are sick. That's a fact. You know, unless you're recording and you know. Are Mary and John constantly sick? Anecdotally, yes. You know, but in actual fact, they've been sick twice this year. It's, you know, you're not going to get some actual facts. If I say to you it's 4 players, I mean, you can't even pick out the stats or the kind of magic sauce that goes into a game. Like, I can get you 2 games. One of them is everybody kind of agrees it's really poor. And then I can get another game everyone loves. And if you compare them, 4 players in each, you know, it's made of cardboard, it's got nice models, it's got, and yet there's that little bit of magic sauce in it. And I might like Bay, Old Bay, and you might like Old Bay, but other people don't. So,
and with that, you just made me very happy with the Maryland reference of Old Bay, which is the spice of Maryland.
I'm still eating it, and they're still selling it over here. They started selling it, not since you arrived, but just in general. I've noticed it, like noticing the type of car that everyone else has when you buy a new car.
That's another thing. I have 2 new cars since the last time we talked.
Yeah, we cut that bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah, I have 2 old cars.
Well, that's the reason I have 2 new cars is my old cars I couldn't get repaired anymore.
Ah.
Okay, so what's your next unpopular opinion?
My unpopular opinion, this is going to be a quick one. There are some games I like that people don't like. There are very few games I think are worthless. I think Monopoly is a fine game if you play it with the rules. I think Catan is an excellent game if you play it with the welfare rules. I don't think any game is... actually, there are some really bad ones. Sin City, for example. But I think they all have a value. And if... even if a game is bad, if some people like it and it gets them to game more and it gets them kind of onto the hard stuff, then that's a positive thing. Can't argue with that, can you?
I'm actually going to agree with you on that.
Oh, shoot. Okay, give me an unpopular opinion there, Philip. Let's move along.
An unpopular opinion is that 18XX games are too long for what they are.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And this is coming from someone who really loves 18XX games and will sit down and play them.
Ooh. Well, as somebody who has never played an 18X game, but is rotating in their chair and looking at a copy. Oh, look at this.
And you can hear the leather of the fine Corinthian leather of his chair moving. 1846. Yes, a very good game, although it's a little odd from the 18XX series because it has two operating rounds, but
opinion's worthless.
Yeah, my opinion is worthless. The fact is it's a little different from other 18XX games because of the two operating rounds. Most games have only one operating round.
Okay. I should have known that when I bought it. But that's still kind of unused.
Yes.
You are probably right. You seem to know your way around an 18XX. I'll give you an unpopular opinion. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
I think that apps are fantastic with games. And I go further. You're okay. You seem to be shaken there. You're triggered. Yeah, I can see the triggering. I think digital games, like fully digital games, are in a lot of cases better than their board game equivalents.
So that's two popular, unpopular opinions embedded in there. So I'm going to break them down. And one I'm going to vehemently and viciously disagree with.
Yep.
And one of them I'm going to actually agree with. Let me start with the ones that I agree with, that some digital implementations of games are better than the cardboard version of it. And I'm going to agree with that. There's a lot of games that have a lot, i.e. too much, maintenance and upkeep and math and things like that, that actually detract from the decision-making and the game playing. I would actually say that, you know, and the one that comes to mind is, was it Through the Ages?
Through the Ages, yeah. Although, I'm going to jump in there, and just to be devil's advocate, is Through the Ages is a wonderful game in person, and the reason why it's wonderful in person, not that I've played it in a long while, is you don't get... Now, I'm probably playing a game of Through the Ages as we speak, but online, fantastic, but you're missing that tiny little sizzle of being face-to-face, just like, you know, witnesses in a court, you know, that are glaring at each other. That's got a little bit to it. But yeah, the actual implementation Through the Ages, it is the best value game I've ever owned and probably always will be. But yeah.
And for games like that, it makes 100% sense to have a digital implementation. And it's a game that you can play. Whoops, sorry about that. It is a game that you can play, you know, asynchronously. It's a game that allows for... the digital implementation allows for, you know, a richer experience because you are focusing mostly on the decision making, and it helps you understand some of the quirks of the game. But I'm going to vehemently disagree with that apps on games make things better. I don't agree with that. If I'm sitting around the table with my fellow board gamers, and someone has to use their phone or pick up their phone, I think it distracts from the gameplay. It distracts from the social interaction that you have with, you know, with board gaming. And I dislike it. There was one game, I think it was called The Alchemist, where you needed the app to be able to figure out all these. And I'm like, that pulls you out of the game.
Yeah.
Or there was another game where you used your phone to survey a crime scene.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Chronicles of Crime or something.
That's
like that.
It. And yeah. I'm like, that takes you out of the game. It takes you out of being socially interactive with with the people that you're playing with. And I absolutely despise that. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, if you belong to a religion or to, you know, there's a couple of religions like that where on certain days you're not supposed to use any electronics. Those games
say on certain days you're not allowed to use certain apps. When did that religion come into vogue? Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it's more than just Jews, but Orthodox Jews. But again, it's, you know, it further limits any use, you know, further limits it. Now, granted, you know, there's only, you know, 15 or 16 million Jews out there in the world. And I don't know how many Seventh-day Adventists there are. There's probably not that many. But the reality is that I don't think that apps provide anything. And I think, in fact, they detract from the actual gameplay.
Oh, well, I'm going to jump in there, Philip, because I would have to say there are certain games that are improved by them with apps. For example, have you played Mansions of Madness?
Mm-mm.
That's a great game. There's a version 1 and a version 2. Version 1 was a fine game. It did have a lot of setup. If you get the setup wrong, it totally messes up the game. And it was more than possible to do that. I mean, you had to kind of Santa Claus check it 3 times to make sure you had it right. And even then, it was quite possible to mess up the scenario. With the app that comes with the game, you don't have to do anything like that. It sets up the game for you. And what's very, very neat is I've played the same scenario more than once, and it changes the scenario around when you play it. It changes some elements in that particular scenario. Now, Mansion of Madness is kind of a dungeon crawly game. Call of Cthulhu, you're going to a particular place, be it a mansion, be it a, you know, a town, and you're investigating, and there's cultists and monsters, typical Cthulhu stuff. And but what the app does is it will set up the map for you and say, okay, put this piece here, this piece here, this piece here. But the next time you play it, it won't be exactly the same, even though you're replaying the same scenario. So I think what you're talking about there, 100% agree with. I think you're interrupting your suspension of disbelief in things. That's a badly designed app. And there's loads of those things like timers, and you need this code to do that. It's like a day at the races with the Marx Brothers, that you need this code to get that, to open this book. But I think if it's done correctly and tastefully, like your dressing gown, then we can it can be a much better experience, and it can take out some of the math and that in the background. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I would just point out one last thing before we move on to the next unpopular opinion is, and this goes back to an earlier episode that we did. One of the other problems with apps is if the board game publisher stops supporting it and if it breaks down, right? Because things do break down over time.
Not the software. They don't. I can tell you that for a fact.
Yeah, if that were true, you wouldn't be employed. So
engaged is probably a better word than employed, you know, gainfully employed. Yes and no. What one thing to keep in mind is that there are a lot of talented people out there that keep these things alive. But you're not wrong. But I mean, the apps tend to be, certainly the Android stuff anyway, tends to be kind of discrete little files that can exist on the internet forever, because the amount of storage on the internet is increasing dramatically, constantly. So yes, but once something's right, it can go forever. But your cardboard will wear out quicker than the app will wear out, in my opinion.
Well, that's assuming that people are paying for keeping the servers online. I have one app in particular there where it's
Depends on the thing. Again, I think it depends on who it is and what how they do it. But yeah, there's right and wrong on this. I suppose we'll just stamp this as a bit from column A and a bit from column B.
Sounds good. So for my next unpopular opinion, and I just had it and I'm having a senior moment. God, getting old sometimes is so much fun. There are games, and you shouldn't be afraid of them, that have a massive rule overset, and it is worth the time to learn it.
I have to agree.
So there's a couple of games where the rule overhead is crazy high. Mm. I mean, even by my standards, like Feudum by Oddlot Games or Odd Job Games. I can't remember. But once you figure it out and once you get the game going, it's fantastic. Now, I will have to say that we got one rule wrong that took this game, which was normally 2 to 3 hours, and it made it like 4 or 5 hours. That was brutal. Actually, normally it's under 2 hours, but we got one major rule wrong, and it's got some really funky mechanics in it, and it's, but it, the decisions are interesting. And so there are, so just because something has a high a rules overhead, don't immediately discount it.
I would totally agree with that. I'm a big fan of GMT games, and their rule books in a lot of cases are terrible. When this is like a, if you're familiar with Warhammer 40K, the orcs in it are basically, you know, football hooligans. And one of the things they
and
said,
that's soccer for our American friends.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's football hooligans as well.
Only in Philadelphia. Only in Philadelphia are there football hooligans.
Yep. one of the things they said in a quote was, you know, speaking as the orcs, was warp drives are complicated, are actually easy, you know, sound complicated, but when you know how to make them, they're easy. Yeah. So once you've gotten past the difficulties of some rules, there's an awful lot of, once you've cracked the shell, there's an awful lot of nice meat under it, or vegetables or whatever you like yourself. I think it's worth, if 100 people are saying this game is great and fantastic and stick with it. I mean, Pax Premier is not a simple game.
No.
There's a little bit, you know, but there's a lot of gaming joy to be had once you've kind of gone, okay, I'm going to dedicate myself to learn this. Like a lot of things, you know, you learn the violin or you learn, you know, to kick a football or whatever. There's a barrier to entry in those things. But once you get to a point, you start to get enjoyment from it. Not all complicated games are good, obviously, but some of the ones I've played have been well worth my investment in time.
Well, do you think we've irritated enough people with this topic?
I got one more.
Go for it.
Okay, now I'm going to temper this a little bit, but are you ready for this? This is a home digger.
No, I'm not ready.
There's no such thing as a co-op game.
Ooh, them's fighting words amongst a certain crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably co-op people that play guitar and sit around campfires. The co-op games, take a co-op game like, say, Pandemic. What happens in Pandemic, Philip? I'm going to talk you through this.
You work together. Are you talking about the alpha gamers?
Yeah.
Okay.
So co-op leads to alpha gamers. Like, this is a fact. So obviously, you know, a lot of people know this, but what will happen is you're playing something like Pandemic and it's like playing solitaire, where somebody comes up behind you and says, oh, you should put the 7 on the 8 there, and you should also move the king over to that, and that would free it up. There's always somebody there. Not always, but in a lot of cases, somebody who knows the game better, like Captain Kirk in Generations, when he's looking at, you know, the young captain and going, Jesus, come on, just fucking, you know, put the shields up. It's obvious. What happens is somebody takes over the running of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're doing it in the best interest, because they know better than everyone else. And probably they do, because they played it 10 times. New players haven't. And that's not a great experience, or might not be.
So I would say, generally, I'll agree with you. There are some games that take on the alpha gamer and create ways of kind of overriding the alpha gamer. So yep. For instance, Mechs versus Minions.
Okay.
That game, because it's a co-op game, but you're also programming, mm-hmm. and you're not telling other people, you know, you can talk and the way things work. And there's another game, I forget which one it is, that has a timer. You can talk about whatever you want, but then once the timer goes, yeah. it goes.
I get you. The board game, The Thing, the John Carpenter movie, they have a very clever mechanic, but they also have a traitor mechanic, which totally changes that. But what I would say is, if you have something with an alpha gamer in it, and there are ways of mitigating that with rules, you have a single player game. And if you have a single player game, here's the second kind of sting in this, is you don't actually have a game. What you have is you have a puzzle. Mm. So you've got a team /one person who is trying to figure out the best way to game the system to get the result they want. And that's not a game. That's not against each other, or, you know, it's not that you're competing. You're working together or working singly on a solo game effectively to solve a puzzle. And you might have fun doing that. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I don't think it's really a game in the strictest sense.
I'm going to agree and disagree. I don't know. I think co-op games with the right crowd can be really good and not necessarily an alpha gamer, but you're right. The propensity for alpha gaming in co-ops is very, very high. And really it's a solo game that you're playing with a bunch of people. I mean, there's one game which I really enjoy, which is Nemo's War, which is a solo game. And, you know, maybe you consider it a puzzle, maybe not. I enjoy it and I enjoy playing it. So
wrong. No, I don't get me wrong. If it sounds like I'm saying it's a bad thing, a solo game, it's not. Solo games are fantastic. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. I mean, computer games or solo games or single player games, fantastic.
Yeah.
The same way. You can't kind of go, oh, it's a single player game. Nothing wrong with that, but I think it does lead to people just playing the one game, and it's not quite the same experience. I put it a different way to you. A single or co-op game is like the coach's son or daughter. They've got to play a bit harder to prove themselves to me. Okay. Not just kind of get a free ride like everyone else, because, you know, they are who they are.
You know what? Can't disagree with that. So I have one last unpopular opinion. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to see that you're sitting for this, because this might knock you off, might cause you to stumble or
better not be about diplomacy.
Yeah, exactly. No. It's something even more unpopular. People actually like playing board games with me.
Sorry, I would need to know those people. I would need to know they're not AI generated, and I would need to interview them carefully and find out if they've been enumerated, have been paid in advance, you know, for to come out with that opinion. People like playing games with you. I'm sorry. I on that bombshell. I think maybe perhaps what it is that'll just tell you the power of the game, you know, of gaming, if people, you know, no, I'm sure they do, you know, it's not, you know, in this infinite universe, I'm sure it's entirely possible that people enjoy interacting with you, Philip.
and on that
meaningful way,
on that happy note, it was a pleasure to talk to you finally after all of our various scheduling issues and life issues.
That's it.
And I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about something interesting next time. What do you think?
I hope so. And that's also going to be an unpopular opinion.
I disagree.
And with that, we like to say, play more games.
Play more games.